I'm excited to have my friend Kim on the podcast today. She is going to be sharing her journey of how she has been sober for 2 years and really the impact that drinking had on her health. And through this journey of being sober, she was able to develop new self-care, new stress management, and really be able to feel better and get healthier. This episode also has many parallels to eating and sugar cravings, because behind both of these, typically we are not having enough self-care. We're not knowing how to deal with our emotions, deal with the things in life that are coming up. So we look to alcohol or we look to food. So I hope that you guys enjoy this episode and really listen and see, what is that next thing you need to do? Is there something in your life that you want to be in more choice with, that you don't want to be controlled by anymore? And I encourage you that if you feel stuck in your health, is to reach out and get some support. Health coaching is powerful. There's going to be a link in the description down below. You can sign up for a free call. And this really gives you an opportunity to chat with me, to start to see what health coaching is like, to start be able to put some of these missing pieces together that are keeping you stuck. So I encourage you guys, if you need help, if you need some support and accountability, reach out. Hi friends, and welcome to the Healthy Beyond 40 Show. I'm Michelle, mom of four and military wife, and I'm passionate about helping women get healthy from the inside out so they can feel better and live their best life. Do you feel like you're struggling to lose weight and get in shape? If you're ready to develop healthier habits, exercise consistently, and lose weight sustainably, then you're in the right place. I combine my expertise from my doctorate in physical therapy to my experience as a health coach, personal trainer, and yoga teacher to bring you actionable steps for a healthy lifestyle. No magic pill here, so lace up those shoes and get moving. Kim, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you here today. Can you introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Kim Hines. I am a nutritional health coach. And I have a family that I have two stepkids that are all grown. I only have one at home, so I'm kind of an empty nester. He's not home much anyway, so I feel like an empty nester. I have chickens. I have a dog named Pepper. Good life. I have a wonderful practice with two therapists called Wellspring Counseling and Health. And then I also am kind of on my own. I started with Kim Hines Health and Wellness. I help menopausal women over 40 just really feel good and in control of food in their bodies. And that's something I've been working on, by the way, for a long time myself.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. So let's dive into our topic today. So tell us, for you, what life was like when you were drinking?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I don't really even remember drinking too much in college. I mean, we all had our moments where we would overdo it, you know, and you would have that horrible hangover the next day. And I remember vividly now, as I'm looking back, when I really started drinking alcohol on a consistent basis. When I got divorced, I was a single mom for about 7 years. And I remember when the kids were with their dad, you know, we'd have week on, week off. I would dig into the, you know, the food. I mean, that's kind of my thing, was the emotional eating. But I also would buy a bottle of wine and I would have a glass of red wine. I don't remember overdoing it, but it was odd that I would be drinking by myself. And perhaps it was part of that emotion of being alone at home.
Yeah.
But then, and I got remarried about 6 or 7 years after that, and I blended a family. I had, you know, like I said, I have two from my husband, Mike, and I have two from me. And so not only blending a family, I happen to have a very stressful job. Before I decided to look into integrative nutrition, I was a high school math teacher and I drove a long way. We had four kids that had to be driven to all different places. We had this new blending of a family and I was finding myself literally thinking about having a glass of wine on the way home. And that's when I knew, like, oh, wow, I really like this wine, you know, come down thing. I didn't really think anything of it. We also were in this weird time of people talking about, you know, the mommy wine culture. And so I don't think, and everybody else seemed to be doing it around me. So I didn't really question the fact that I would come home at night, and while I was cooking dinner, I would be looking for that bottle of wine. And if I didn't have it, I would drive to the store on the way home to make sure that I could have a glass. And then just to be honest, there was a time when that stepped up to two glasses. And even though, you know, a lot of people say, oh, with drinking, you are never that bad. I'm putting this in air quotes for the listeners, that bad. But when you are thinking about it before you even get home, you're making an extra stop. And, you know, you've stepped it up as if you weren't getting enough out of it from the first glass. That's when I thought, wow, you know, is this normal? Is this not normal? But it became a habit. So I just did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's hard because our culture, it is that mommy wine culture, or like you're stressed, having a bad day with the kids. We have a drink and it's almost normalized. And it almost, I don't know, now that you're sober, and I really don't drink that often, it's pretty rare, but it's almost like you feel like an outsider or something's wrong with you if you're not drinking too. But I love how you brought up, like, if you're thinking about it on your way home, and it's becoming a daily thing, that that's sort of giving you a clue something is off. So you mentioned a little bit, you brought up stress, and it sort of started escalating once you were working as a teacher, driving further. Like, what else was actually going on? Was there anything else, like, now looking back, like, you didn't really see it then, but looking back, you're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And really quick, before I tell you what those underlying really root cause things were, it's so funny you said how we've normalized things, because we had friends come into town and we went out to dinner. And I was earlier on in my sober journey and I ordered a Diet Coke. And as a health coach, they were more freaked out that I ordered a Diet Coke. But if I had ordered a glass of white wine, nobody would have said anything. So that's, and so what a weird commentary on our society and what people think. But yes, those underlying root causes, there was so much going on that I was not facing because I was so busy and I didn't have a lot of self-care. I did work out. I worked out after school in my classroom because that's the only time I could fit it in. I had to be on the road by 6 o'clock in the morning. There was zero self-care going on. We had four kids in the house. I was cooking for six people. And don't get me wrong, Mike was picking up a lot of the slack. It just was a lot because he was working full time too. And his job was very demanding. When you blend two families, you're also dealing with the emotions of parenting differently. We had not really lived together, and that was just a new experience. Clearly, we hadn't lived together with all the kids, and I was getting zero sleep, and I was probably going through menopause. So there was a cascade of ridiculous things that were going on. And even though my eating was in line because I was almost a little bit obsessive and the working out was happening, I had zero stress management. Plus, I was in front of 100 teenagers all day, every day, coming home to middle schoolers and high schoolers. Zero break, basically. So the only way that I would get a break is if, you know, I said, hey, I'm going out with friends, or you're in charge of the kid. Like, there was never a time for that. In stress, self-care, lack of alone time, and life, you know, learning how to manage. And I'm going to tell you this very honest, kind of embarrassing thing too, is I feel like it exacerbated my agitation. So I know that I also was not happy with how I was being in the relationship with the kids, with my attitude. And I think the wine exacerbated that.
Yeah, it can feel good temporarily, but it doesn't last long. And it's almost, I mean, it is an addiction because you almost need that to sort of calm down or chill out, and it doesn't last long enough. So I love how you brought up not getting enough sleep, hormones are changing, starting to head towards menopause, not really having stress management. Even though you were eating pretty good and working out, there were these other pieces that are missing that really drive actions of what we do. So correct me if I'm wrong. So you've been sober for 2 years now.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, what has been the hardest part, or maybe especially at the beginning, what was really hard or challenging about going sober?
Well, I think, first of all, I've been drinking on and off for over 30 years. So that alone is part of the habit. I think societal pressures are there also. But the hardest part was really breaking the habit while my husband still had a couple beers once in a while. My friends were still having the glass of wine, the white wine that I loved. And so when I started, what I did is just the same way I do with food with people that I work with. I said, you know what? I'm not going to never say never, but I'm actually going to do this long enough to see how I feel and see if this is something that's really necessary in my life, to see if I can at least reset my body, right? Reset my mind, reset my body, and find other ways to cope with things. And so the hardest part was, I remember going to somebody's birthday party, and the friend who threw the birthday party for her husband was beautiful and wonderful and actually had a mocktail available. But the other people in the room were like, are you sure I can't get you a drink? Are you sure? And it's so leading. It's almost like a reflection on them that, are you sure you don't want it? Because maybe I'll feel comfortable, you know? And then there was other people, yeah. There were other people that would say things like, oh, you're being so good. And again, it's like the food issue. It's not good or bad. It's about what you feel is right for you right now. And so then I had this weird feeling, like, because when people, it's just like eating. If I didn't eat the pizza at school, or I didn't have the birthday cake, oh, Kim won't have that. It kind of became this righteous, like people put this righteous thing on me that I didn't ask for. I literally just wanted to take a break. The other thing I found very challenging is we have, even though we have so many wonderful substitutes, we have non-alcoholic beers, we have mocktails, we have mocktail clubs, we have, you know, we even have de-alcoholized wine. It didn't give me the feeling. So I can have all those things, but I had to, the hardest part was coping. I had to cope and figure it out for myself, like how to come down. And I think the other part that was really challenging was just having an honest conversation with my kids too, saying, hey, this has not been serving me and I'm not trying to change, convert, judge, but I just want you to be aware that I know this isn't serving me anymore. And they would even forget. They're, three of them are old enough to drink. And so when I spend time with them, they'll offer me something. And the last time I went to Colorado to spend time with my kids, my son had non-alcoholic beer in the fridge that I could have. And I didn't need it, but it was nice that the thought was there.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets really hard when you're around family or extended family or friends and everyone's drinking, because you feel like an outsider. And it's the same thing with food, just as you're talking about, as we talk with clients, like, how do I go to that birthday party? Like, I really don't want the cake, but you feel this pressure. And that takes a lot of digging and working through to come to a place where you can really stand in freedom around food or alcohol, whatever it is that keeps driving you. And I love how you brought up, you really had to figure out how you were going to cope. Because it's the same thing with a diet. You can like slap something on, but if you don't deal with what's going on, that emotion, that stress, whatever's fueling it, it's still going to be there. So you could go sober for a month or two, but if you're not figuring out what's going on and how to change that and work with that, it's still going to be there. So when you started, I love how you brought up, you sort of did it like a trial. Like, I'm going to try this and see how it makes me feel. So when you did your trial, you did it where you were 100% not drinking, and then did you just end up sticking with that?
Yes. The most control I had with alcohol was the 3 days leading up to my quit date. And I was in North Carolina with my mom and stepdad, and my mom doesn't drink anymore. But my stepdad still enjoys having a glass of wine with dinner. And so I made a very conscious effort with him to enjoy this one glass, slow it down, really enjoy it. I was not doing that. It's just like food. Again, I was not enjoying that wine. I was consuming that wine as medicine, and I wasn't enjoying it. So the irony is, the last 3 days before I quit, I was able to enjoy every single sip and take my time, and it lasted the entire meal. Also, I just want to share that I never drank with dinner. I would always have it before. I would always have it on an empty stomach with my husband. It was cocktail hour. And there's probably some subconscious thing to that too, because I wanted to taste the alcohol. I wanted to feel it. But what happened was when I made it at the beginning, when people go sober, and sober is a whole interesting word in itself. Some people don't like to use that word. And I don't identify necessarily with being sober. I'm just a non-drinker now. But when I did do that, people count it in days at the beginning. So 30 days, 60 days, 90 mm-hmm. days. And when I got to 3 months, I was like, well, this is so silly. Why would I go back now? I finally had it out of my system. I had the habit out of my system. 3 months seemed to be a magic thing for me. So then I was at 6 months, and then I was at a year. And by the time I got to a year, there was zero. Literally, I could not come up with one good reason for me to go back and drink. And I have people that I help with this right now, and they still have this idea that, well, I want to be able to drink for this. I want to be able to drink for this. I want to be able to have a cocktail with this. And that's fine. There's no judgment. There's no perfect way to do it unless you have a real problem. And that's when you need to see someone. Mm-hmm. But it's a way to reset, to say, what is this role that I have? And I realized the role of alcohol had zero positive benefits for me personally. Again, not judging anyone, not trying to convert, but any relationship you're in, people, any kind of relationship you have, you stay in that relationship for the positive things that it gives you, that it's uplifting, that it's for you, that it's not toxic, mm-hmm. right? So think of it like people. If this is not bringing you joy and it's not good for you and you're having residual disadvantages later, non-beneficial things that are happening to you, think of it like a relationship. Is this somebody I have to cut off? And I really have felt like that. I broke up with alcohol.
Yeah, I love that. And I love how you also bring up, it's a little bit different for everybody. And I also think when people are stuck in sugar cravings, it's the same thing. Like, does someone need to cut it out cold turkey? Or can they have like a treat once a week and not go into a spiral of sugar cravings? So I love how you say that with alcohol too. For me personally, I probably have a drink once a month or once every 2 months. Like, it doesn't control me. I have a good relationship. Alcoholism runs in my family. So I'm very aware of that, because a lot of people, when you're using alcohol, especially when you're stressed or you're using that to bring or calm yourself down, what happens is when life starts to fall apart for you and something happens, that's what you go to. And that's where you start really seeing those negative effects from drinking. So I love how you brought that up. So tell us a little bit about some of the health benefits of not drinking and really not letting that alcohol control you.
Yes. I feel like there's so many mental benefits as well as physical. And one of the things that I would do is in the morning I would wake up, and if I was just even a little bit foggy, I'm not even sure if I knew that, but I also had what we affectionately call hangxiety. Anxiety is this feeling where you're like, one, regretting what you did, and you're regretting, like, I would always say, I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm not going to drink Monday through Friday. I'm not going to have wine. And it was really like a personal thing. Again, I wasn't over the top, but it was a personal feeling that my gut, I had lost my gut feeling on this. And I think intuition and gut feelings, when you're on something else that is not natural, you lose that ability to make those good decisions for yourself. And I also realized that I kind of am one of those people that is easily pulled into things like food, alcohol, scrolling on my phone. I get that dopamine hit mm-hmm. and I can't stop. So another benefit was it helped me kind of look at other things, taking a walk in the evening, you know, would substitute for that coping mechanism. Because even though you get like that nice dopamine hit, alcohol truly is a depressant. So I would never in the end feel as good as I thought I was going to feel. The second thing I learned is because I wasn't drinking even one glass of wine, I wasn't having the second, because when you start to drink, your inhibitions obviously go down. So more is more, you know, you just, it's like if one tastes good, then another one tastes good and it's going to be great. And I'm going to feel even better. But you have this plateau with alcohol where things start to go downhill after a certain point. I also ate more. You know, there is a statistic that we have the ability to eat 300 to 500 more calories when we're drinking alcohol because we just don't have any hunger or satisfaction cues. There, everything is just quelled, again, like the gut instinct. So I felt like that was really beneficial for me, because if alcohol is a coping mechanism and I'm making dinner for everyone, that's a secondary coping mechanism by having seconds, you know, and there's so much food around when I was cooking for six people that I also had this issue of like, hey, I'm going to grab seconds before the kids get them. But I didn't need seconds. The alcohol had completely knocked out my satisfaction cues. My face looked different after quitting drinking too. I had puffiness under my eyes. I felt like my face was a little bit inflamed, my joints and my muscles. And again, I worked out a lot. And I felt very soon after quitting that I wasn't having the same issues with recovery, because that inflammation had come down drastically. And it's interesting, alcohol stays in your system a lot longer than people think. They think they can take a week off, but alcohol is in your system from 10 to 14 days. Mm-hmm. So really, when you're not drinking in that first 14 days, you're still in withdrawal mode. So you're not really cutting it out completely. So I knew that I needed like 1 to 3 months to really know whether or not this was working for me. So just keep that in mind. If you decide, hey, I want to experiment with this, definitely give yourself more than that 14 days. And then beyond that a little bit, just to feel the benefits. But I did feel, even in my midsection, and I felt some of that coming in, the bloating in my stomach from eating at night was down. And I could go on and on. There's so many amazing benefits. Dehydration. I think that's another reason why my skin looked horrible. I was just completely dehydrated in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Alcohol dehydrates. Even though when you drink a lot, you're like going to the bathroom and you're peeing. It is dehydrating you.
Yeah. Sleep is the other one, by the way. And I, you know, that's the same exact thing. You're up all night long.
Yeah. And sleep is such a driver almost for, I don't quite know the words, of more side effects of going in that perimenopause, menopause. When you're not getting enough sleep, you're seeing that. And you're sort of noticing the spiral, not getting enough water, being dehydrated, affecting your skin. Your inflammation is up. And I really like how you brought up at the beginning. I almost sum it up as you're not really able to tune into your body at all. When you're hungry, when you're full, like your emotions, like what's really going on with you. And you're not able to do that. And I think really when we want freedom in our health, freedom with food, freedom from alcohol, whatever that is, we have to be able to tune into our body.
Absolutely. And you know, it's so funny because someone said to me as I had gotten into, I think I was at least 6 months sober, knowing pretty much that I wasn't going back. And, you know, with the rise of legalization of cannabis in our world, a couple of people would mention that to me. And I had to say, you know, again, personal choice. You do what works for you. And medically, if that's something you need, whatever. But me personally, it made me realize I cannot have anything in my body that makes me feel like I'm not me. And, you know, I even have to be careful with caffeine. I've cut that down quite a bit too, because that being a stimulant also changed how my body felt and my hunger cues.
Yeah, that's a great thing to bring up, because that's like around everywhere. Me and my husband went for a walk last night. Like, we walked by these teenagers like spelling it. I'm like, oh my goodness, should we go lecture them? We're not those people. But yeah, and really, it's pot is a gateway to really other drugs, but that's just like not well known. And I mean, there might be a place when someone's in chronic pain or things like that, when we're using it more in a medical situation, but we don't want to take away from living our life, feeling our feelings, even though they don't feel good sometimes, and really being in freedom and choice with the things that we want to do. Because when we use those, we're not really in choice with how we want to live and how we want to act. So
yes. And I would love to just throw in one last thing that we don't think about as women over 40 because we may not be old enough to be concerned yet. But I just read a book called The Healthy Brain Zone by Dr. Colbert. And when we look at alcohol and drugs and processed food and sugar and how it's affecting our long-term brain cognitive function and then the rise of Alzheimer's and dementia, mm-hmm. alcohol is definitely one of the things that he says we do not want to have much in our bodies. There's different things, different genes that we can turn on and off, and alcohol can affect that.
Yeah, I love that. And anytime I listen to like a functional health medicine doctor, they pretty much recommend no alcohol or very, very little. Not even the, like, what do they say? One glass a day for women is okay. Like, they're not even recommending that. That's like too much.
Yes.
So yeah.
Dr. Sarah Gottfried has some great posts about there is no level of alcohol that's good for us. And that has been in my brain for a long time. The interesting part, and you know, as someone who's coaching people, you can have the knowledge. The implementation is what is the hard part.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my clients I've been working with for a little bit, when she started with me, one of her goals was, I want to stop drinking every night. Just like you, I have that like glass of wine. And it was interesting with her. It was almost pretty easy. She started with, I'm just going to drink when I'm out on a date with my husband or friends. So that was still like 2-3 times a week. She thought that was going to be so hard, but it wasn't for her, you know, but having that extra support and accountability, being able to like talk out some of these emotions or things are uncomfortable, like if you're in a situation, really makes a difference between having that head knowledge and actually implementing it in your life. So, yes. And I'm going to put that book Kim mentioned in the description down below if you guys want to check that out. So Kim, tell us where people can find you and about your podcast. And I know you also have an episode number 38 where you had a sober coach on and talked a little bit more about this. So share about that.
Yes, thank you. You can follow me on Instagram, and my podcast is called The Emotional Eats Podcast. And I invited on Katie Campbell to do an episode on just her journey and my journey at the same time. And she's a sober, curious coach. And it was just a fun episode to be able to celebrate. But it's also in this whole space with everything we do, all of us coaches, it is a non-judgmental. It's when you're ready, when you feel like you can do it. And so we just celebrated with that episode. So yeah, go back and listen to that.
Yeah. And I'll have the links in the description to Kim's podcast and her Instagram. So thanks everyone for joining us today. I hope that you took something away, a little piece, whether maybe that is about alcohol or sugar, but when we're thinking about this bigger impact of our emotions and stress and the choices that we're making in our life, are we living in choice? Do we need support? Do we need more accountability to help do that and reach out for that, guys? All right, everyone, have a great day.